Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. The notion of metaphor plays a very important role here in the theory that Nietzsche is setting out in this essay on truth and lying in an extramoral sense. Why is metaphor so important? Well, in one part he's going to say that truth itself is a mobile army of metaphors, metonyms, he goes on. And metonyms are closely related, or metonymy is closely related to metaphors and metaphoricity. As a matter of fact, you could say that a metonymy is a special sort or subclass of metaphors, although some theorists try to distinguish them apart from each other. For Nietzsche, metaphor is going to lie at the very basis of what it is that us human beings do by virtue of our intellects. And when we think about, what the intellect enables us to do, part of it has to do with concepts, grasping those, manipulating them, identifying things as falling under a certain concept, and then, perhaps deducing or at least arguing or inferring to some important conclusions. But language itself was identified early on by the Greeks, for example, Aristotle, as being something that is also key to human beings, and this, the rationality of concepts and intellectual life and that of language were connected with each other. Nietzsche is saying, yeah, they're connected with each other, all right, but they're connected with each other precisely in such a way that a little bit of lying goes on all the time. And the lying goes on in the way that we use language, even the way we coin language, and the way we use concepts. It's constantly taking place. As a matter of fact, you could say that the metaphor is really what is foundational for Nietzsche rather than truth or even lying. Everything can be a metaphor. And then, there is, of course, the issue, well, aren't you being metaphorical and saying that? And Nietzsche would embrace that and say, exactly, I am. So let's take a look at what he's saying. He says, think about what goes on with words, right? Unless we're willing to settle for truth in the form of tautology, we're always exchanging truths for illusions. What is a word? The portrayal of nerve stimuli in sounds. But to conclude from a nerve stimulus to a cause outside of ourselves is already the result of a false and unjustified application of the law of causality. We're going to talk about that in a different area, these laws. And then he says, what would allow us if the truth of the origin of language, the viewpoint of the certainty of terms, were alone decisive? What would allow us to say the stone is hard, as if hard were known to us otherwise than by a subjective stimulation, some sort of nerve stimulus, he's saying here. We arrange things. Now notice what he's saying. We arrange things by genders. This is a function in German, of course, but also in most of the other Indo-European languages. He says we designate the tree, in German, der Baum, as masculine, the plant, die Pflanze, as feminine. And he says, what arbitrary transferences? And we could think of many other features of our language. In English, gender really doesn't play that much of a role, except when we're talking about ships as she or things along those lines. But we have many, many equally arbitrary ways of talking about things, don't we? Some of which we inherited actually from our, sort of Germanic heritage, but some of which crept their weird way in through Latin or Greek or French or all sorts of other. From the German heritage, we inherited these strong verbs, swim, swam, swum, right? Now, what the hell is that about? Well, there's this, umlauting that takes place and verbal changes of the vowels denoting some difference in time. And there's a whole interesting story that can be told there, but it seems rather arbitrary, doesn't it? The language use. So he goes on and he says, we don't grasp things in themselves. What we grasp are things as we make sense of them. So he goes on and he says, the creator of language designates only the relation of things to men, And to express these relations, he uses the boldest metaphors. Now, when we talk about metaphors in most cases, we are thinking about language, right? And we're talking typically about, you know, here's one definition of metaphor, putting one thing in place of another. I am a bear if I have not had my coffee in the morning. I'm not literally a bear. We could make it the kind of metaphor that we call a simile. I'm like a bear if I don't have my coffee in the morning. Same sort of sense. You're substituting bear with its certain qualities for me, right? Or we can talk about, Aristotle's got some great, you know, examples of metaphors that he's taking from the poets in his rhetoric. He compares, for example, a shield to a cup, right? How are they similar? They're round. So you can talk about the cup of Ares, for example, or you can talk about the shield of Dionysus, and you're transferring one thing to another. So there's this one thing being placed in place of another, and there's also a transference of something. Is it a transference of meaning? Is it a transference of sense? In language, we're usually talking about meaning and connotation, but we're also talking about relations, right? When we use that famous metaphor of a face that launched 1,000 ships, did Helen's face like somehow get down there and push each ship off the shore? No, it drew them like magnet to a piece of iron. Again, a metaphor, right? We can't really get away from these. And these are foundational for us, Nietzsche says. Now, he goes a little bit beyond the realm of language to encompass other things. So he talks first about, he says, first he translates a nerve stimulus into an image. First we have an object, we have a nerve stimulus coming from it, and then we have some sort of image. And he says that is the first metaphor. Then the image must be reshaped into a sound, a word. This is a second metaphor. So already we've got metaphor going on by the time that we even get to language. And he says, and each time there is a complete overlapping of spheres, from one sphere to the center of a totally different new one. We're going from different domains, from nerve stimulus, which is in one domain, to image, which is in another domain, unconnected to it, but actually we make the connections, and then to sound, which, again, doesn't have to be connected to it. Each of these is almost like its own world, but we squish these worlds together and push one thing from one world into the next and connect them all up into things that make sense for us. So he goes on and he says, when we speak of trees, colors, snow, and flowers, we believe we know something about the things themselves, although what we have are just metaphors of things which do not correspond at all to the original entity. The nerve stimulus is closer to the object. The image that we have is closer than is the word, but is further away than the nerve stimulus. The word itself is as far away from it as we can possibly get. We can even have words talking about words, and then it gets really complicated, doesn't it? Like when we talk about metaphor. What is a metaphor like? It is one thing in place of another, or a transference. We're already engaging in metaphor in doing that. And then Nietzsche goes on and he says, let us think about the formation of concepts. What makes a word into a concept? Well, when it's supposed to refer not just to one thing, but to a whole bunch of things that are supposed to be similar in some respect, right? So we form mental concepts of, for example, paper, right? Here's a paper, here's another paper, here's another paper, right? And here we go. A whole bunch of papers that are all paper. And what do? Nietzsche says. He says that we overlook the real and the individual. And not because we just sort of forget about it. We're doing that as integral to the formation of concepts. It's not like you could bring that back into the concept. That is what it means to have a concept. That overlooking, that abstracting away. So he goes on and he gives you some examples. He says, just as no leaf is ever exactly the same as any other, certainly the concept leaf is formed by arbitrarily dropping those individual differences, by forgetting the distinguishing factors. And this gives rise to an idea that there is something in nature that is a leaf, independent of us. And that this leaf, we might call it leaf, capital L, is somehow the same in all the things that we call or observe or conceptualize as leaves. This is all metaphorical according to Nietzsche, though. He has another example of a person. As you know, we say that a person is honest. We ask, why did he act so honestly today? Our answer usually goes because of his honesty. And he says, we know nothing of an essential quality called honesty. What we know are numerous individualized, hence dissimilar actions, which we equate by omitting the dissimilar and referring to them as honest actions. Last of all, we formulate out of them a qualitas occulta, that means a hidden quality, with the name honesty. And it's really by overlooking the fact that we engage in this overlooking that we're able to think that our concepts and even our words are referring to classes of objects that are all the same and then just have some accidental differences, if we want to look at it in an Aristotelian way, or if we want to look at it in Nietzsche's sort of almost at antipodes with Plato here in saying that what's real are these things, and they're all individual things, and then we are the ones who create things like archetypes or patterns or forms of them, and that is a metaphorical rather than a reality producing or reality, you know, orienting way of doing things. So metaphor is intrinsically connected to language and concepts. And it's by forgetting the fact that metaphor is actually fundamental that we start to think that language and concepts describe a world that's truly out there being named, being conceptualized by us. Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/Sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.